We're going to focus on the microenvironment, actually, but definitely germ cells. So I think that I had been at the SOC for about 2 months. Does this, this doesn't count in my 10 minutes. I'd been at the SOC for, I'd been at the SOC for 2 months when Prop 71 was passed. So the past 2 years have been a very exciting time for stem cell biology and to be a stem cell biologist in San Diego. And I would just like to thank those people both at the forefront and behind the scenes that have worked very hard to make today possible. So what I'd like to do, because giving the first talk of a session in the morning is difficult, you don't quite know whether or not the caffeine's really kicked in or not, I decided to go very data light. And what I'd like to do primarily is just to introduce you to some of the questions and concepts that we like to think about in our lab here. And then to tell you a little bit about how we're using our system, which is the Drosophila, the fruit fly Drosophila male germline, in combination with some studies that have been done in the mammalian germline, to try and develop a system for the generation and maintenance of human germline stem cells. So as I'm sure many of you know, most adult stem cell populations, when they're removed from their normal microenvironment within the tissue, they actually lose their ability to self-renew, which indicated that the microenvironment plays a critical role in regulating stem cell behavior. And it was this observation that actually prompted Richard Schofield to formally propose the stem cell niche hypothesis in 1978. And so in recent years, there actually has been a lot of movement towards the identification and characterization of stem cell niches within adult tissues. And I've just shown some examples here. So for example, the epithelial stem cells that maintain the interfollicular epidermis and the regenerating hair follicles reside in a specialized region of the outer root sheath called the follicular bulge. The neural stem cells in the brain reside within endothelial niches in the subventricular zone and the hippocampus. And then the germline stem cells that are responsible for generating sperm, so the spermatogonial stem cells, reside along the periphery of the, adjacent to the basement membrane, along the periphery of the seminiferous tubules. But as, again, most of you probably are aware, stem cells are incredibly rare. And in many of these cases, markers that allow a definitive identification of the stem cells in vivo in the context of their microenvironment are lacking. And so this makes characterizing how the stem cells interact with their environment very difficult. And ultimately, what, of course, we would want to do is to recreate these environments in vitro to allow the maintenance and the propagation of these tissue stem cells while maintaining their stem cell characteristics. So that's one of the major advantages of the Drosophila gonad and the Drosophila male germline. So what you're looking at here is an immunofluorescence image down onto the tip of a Drosophila testis. All of the germ cells that are being generated by the germline stem cells are labeled in green. And some of the key cellular components of the stem cell microenvironment or the stem cell niche are stained in red here. So I've got an arrow pointing to one stem cell there, and then there are actually 8 germline stem cells in our system here. And so by using this system and other work that's been done in the Drosophila gonad, we've actually been able to come up with some of the key features that we think are conserved with among all stem cell niches. And this is just to show you that what happens, the hub cells at the tip of the testis that I had labeled in red there, they secrete a growth factor that is necessary and sufficient for specifying stem cell self-renewal of those adjacent stem cells. And so here you can see that that growth factor is expressed just in the hub cells. And in this panel to the right, you can see that those surrounding germline stem cells are the only cells that are actually responding to the growth factor. I mean, once you have one cell distance or two cell distances away, those cells are no longer seeing these signals to self-renew, and they initiate differentiation. So what that's allowed us to do, as I mentioned, is to come up with a list of what we think are conserved features of stem cell niches or stem cell microenvironments. One of them are the support cells that secrete self-renewal factors and survival signals to help maintain the stem cell population. We've also shown that there's a role for cell-cell adhesion and cell extracellular matrix adhesion for holding those stem cells within the niche and within the microenvironment and close to those self-renewal signals. And then one other thing that we've been able to demonstrate using our system is that the spatial organization or the placement of the stem cells within the 3D architecture of the tissue that can impart some kind of polarity onto the stem cell so that it knows where to put a daughter cell that will self-renew and where to put a daughter cell that will initiate differentiation along a specific lineage. So this is just another image of a Drosophila testis. This is a phase contrast image, and you can see it's a long coiled tube. You can see all of the different stages of spermatogenesis. Those stem cells are here at the tip. We have a series of transit amplifying spermatogonia labeled by the bar. Those spermatogonia grow in volume about 25 times. So this is the larger spermatocytes, which will initiate meiosis. So this is a cluster of 16 spermatocytes in their first meiotic divisions. We have haploid spermatids here, and then these bundles that you can see coming back up through the lumen of the testis are the mature sperm tails. And so I hope what you can at least begin to appreciate is the fact that we have markers that allow us to recognize our stem cells. We have a nice tissue where we can see the spatial temporal organization of the stem cells and all of the differentiating progeny. We have tools to mark the stem cells and then follow all of the differentiating progeny that are derived from that one stem cell. And so what this allows us to do is to study stem cells and even mutant phenotypes without disrupting the normal microenvironment here. And so we've used this system to actually, we've used a genetic approach, a candidate approach, as well as genomics to begin to identify both intrinsic and extrinsic factors that are involved in regulating the critical cell fate decision between renewal of stem cell identity and the initiation of differentiation. But our lab is specifically interested in the role of the stem cell microenvironment and how that can actually influence the decision to self-renew or initiate differentiation. And specifically, the kinds of experiments we've been doing in the lab for the past 2 years have been focused on understanding how a functional stem cell microenvironment is maintained during development, but then also how that microenvironment changes as the animal ages, and then also during a tumor model. So I'd like to just show you a few examples of those results, just again, so you get an idea of the kinds of things that we can do. So what I'm showing here are the phase contrast images of testes, and on the bottom I'm showing you a high mag view of those hub cells, what I said were the key critical component of the stem cell niche in the testis. So here on your left is a wild-type testis. You can see it's got all of the stages of spermatogenesis. It's filled with sperm. And on the bottom, what I'm showing you is an immunofluorescence image using antibodies to the Drosophila homolog of the epithelial cadherin. And as you may know, cadherins are very important for mediating cell-cell adhesion. And in a wild-type testis, we can see high levels of that, the level of cadherin. When we look at testes from an older animal, you can see that the testis is much smaller. There are many fewer differentiating germ cells, which indicates that spermatogenesis is decreasing over time. What our lab has found is that there are pretty significant changes that occur within the stem cell microenvironment over time. And one of those is a decrease in the cell-cell adhesion molecule DE cadherin, and you can see that here. We have a mutation in the lab that we've called shutoff. We know the gene that's responsible for this mutation, but as you can see here at the tip of the testis, you just have mature sperm. So all of these early germ cell stages, as well as the stem cells, have been lost in this mutant. And again, when we look at how what the microenvironment looks like in this example, we see that there's been complete loss of this cell-cell adhesion molecule. So this is just one example of how we can use the Drosophila testis to correlate loss of spermatogenesis and or decreased spermatogenesis and loss of stem cells with changes within the microenvironment. And I would just like to point out, this is something we may be able to talk about during the panel discussion, but we feel like these changes that we've observed in the older animals, the changes to the microenvironment, are slightly preceding changes that we see to the stem cells that occur during aging. We feel like this may actually have pretty significant implications when considering the use of stem cell-mediated therapies on older individuals. But what I've talked mostly about here are the changes that are occurring in the adult tissues. And one thing I would like to point out is that stem cells actually encounter many different microenvironments during development. And one of the, or niches during development, and one of the examples of which many of you may be more familiar with is the different embryonic niches that hematopoietic stem cells find themselves in during development. So hematopoietic stem cells, or hematopoiesis initiates in the yolk sac initially, then it moves on to the aorta, gonadmetanephros, and the placenta, then to the fetal liver, and then definitive hematopoiesis actually occurs in the bone marrow. And a similar kind of thing happens in Drosophila and to primordial germ cells, which are the precursors to the germline stem cells I've been talking about. So what I'm showing you here are just some fluorescent images of the primordial germ cells and their migratory pathway in Drosophila. They're specified at the posterior of the embryo. They actually have to, they're swept into the interior of the embryo. They have to migrate through the hindgut, through the endoderm to actually come to the point where they can interface and coalesce with the somatic component of the gonad. And that's what you're seeing here at the bottom. Once they've actually coalesced with the somatic component and begun to initiate gametogenesis, or the self-renewing divisions. And so what's pretty amazing is the fact that mammalian stem cell, germline stem cells, although the specification event is very different, they go through a strikingly similar migration pattern. And what I'm showing you here are a series of movies where they're migrating through the hindgut, laterally here, and then this is once they've actually, the male germline stem cells have colonized the genital ridge here, and the sex cords have formed. And I just wanted to point out that this point here is a very interesting stage because it's at day 11, and all of this is in the mouse. At day 11, something really unique happens, and that's actually when the mammalian primordial germ cells lose their pluripotency. And so and then they become nullipotent, and at that point, they'll only ever form germline stem cells and give rise to the spermatogonial stem cells that that we like to study in the lab. So just in closing, what I'd like to say is that what we'd like to do in the lab and what we've actually just been funded to do recently is to come up with a series of niches, if you will, or in vitro conditions that will allow us to study the specification or the development of germline stem cells from human ES cells. And then we'd also like to create another environment to study that point at which germline stem cells lose their pluripotency and become nullipotent, and then also come up with another niche similar to the periphery of the seminiferous tubules where the spermatogonial stem cells reside and initiate self-renewing divisions to generate those cells that will eventually form mature sperm. So with that, I'd just like to thank all of the people in my lab that make it worthwhile coming to work every day. I'll point out that Justin Vogue, a graduate student at the lab, has actually received CIRM training, a training grant slot, so he'll be presenting a poster this afternoon, so I invite you to go and visit his poster and then also my funding agencies. So in the Drosophila model system, it's established very early on, and the germ cells are recruited into the niche. So even if you don't have a germline, you still form the gonad. The somatic component of the gonad still forms. So and we know that it's incredibly important, too, in terms of specifying the sexual identity of the germline. So if you have XY germ cells and you put them adjacent to XX soma, they'll try and initiate oogenesis as opposed to spermatogenesis. So that's just one other indication of how important the microenvironment is to germ cell development. Hey, Rob.
So, Leanne, what is the evidence that the germ cells in Drosophila have the pluripotent capability that you're interested in studying?
Well, I don't think that I didn't mean to imply that.
Okay.
So I don't think that the germline stem cells in Drosophila are pluripotent in the same kind of way that mammalian germ cells are pluripotent.
So you're interested then in studying the mammalian germ cells?
Right. Oh, exactly. So creating microenvironments to study human germ cell specification from human ES cells, and then coming up with a way to study this window, which, you know, we can only assume exists for human germline stem cells because everything that we know about mammalian germ cell development comes from the studies that have been done in the mouse. So we're just assuming that similar kinds of things happen and that similar growth factors are going to mediate the same kind of specification event and things like that. But yeah, so there's really no evidence that there's the same kind of pluripotency of germline stem cells in Drosophila. So, sorry. Thanks for clarifying.